This is Dr. Herbert Barley, Dean of the University of Healing, with 2010 Lecture Symposium. Proposition. Why? My mind is my most prized possession. My mind is my most prized possession. Why is my mind my most prized possession? What does my mind do for me? How does my mind function? Does my mind give me things to think about? Or do I give my mind things to think about? Where does my mind come from? Does it come out of the infinite cosmos? Well, I know where my brain comes from. My brain is in my body, and my brain has another name. Do you know what its name is? Can you give me a sample? What would you call your brain? The big...
Computer.
Exactly. That's what it is. The brain is a big computer, and it's really not very big, but the brain is our computer, which operates our body, which conducts all of the autonomic nervous system functions of our body, which tells us what we need to do and what we should do and how it's getting cold or it's getting warm or, you know, what things we should do. And the brain is telling us all this stuff. Now, where does the brain get the information? The brain gets the information from the mind. Now, this is where all of our trouble comes in. Because the brain gets the information from the mind. Now, where does the mind get the information? The mind is the universal awareness. The mind is the universal allness. The mind is the isness, the allness, the whole nine yards, the whole shooting match, you know, everything. The brain is everything. Excuse me, the mind is everything. The brain merely operates what the mind tells it to do. Now, how do you control what comes into your brain? How do you control what you take out of the infinite cosmos of the mind to work? Here we have Sybil. And Sybil is sitting here all so proper and so correct, you know, and so right. And I say, Sybil, tell me, right this second, what were you thinking? And she says, well, I was thinking about planet XYZ in the galaxy of RTQ, and I was living there, and I was the world president of the entire galaxy, and I was operating this thing, and I was thinking, gee, that's interesting, you know. And we should have more freedom with our operation of the galaxy, because we're tightening down so that the young people are wanting to go out and try their wings, and we're not giving them a chance. And I say, oh, really? Sounds like it's on Earth that way too, a little bit, you know. And she says, yes. She says, when I was president of the Earth galaxy, before I was president of the Universal galaxy, I had those same experiences. Well, when were you president of the Earth galaxy? And she says, now. When were you president of the Universal galaxy? She says, now. Now, how can you be sitting here talking to me and sharing ideas with me and you can't figure out which galaxy you're on? No. She says, well, when I'm on the Earth galaxy, my mind instantly reverts to the knowledge I have of the Earth experiences. And when I'm in my universal uniform, I think in the universal aspect. Well, how is thinking in the universal aspect different than thinking in the local aspect here of this mind on this world, this Milky Way that we're in? How does it differ? And she said, well, to say how it differs in only one thing. One very graphic thing, but one thing. The Earth experience, the Earth galaxy experience, is the Earth galaxy experience. And the Universal galaxy experience is the Universal galaxy experience. That's how they differ. But in particulars, well, since I'm a universalist, she says, since I am in the allness, I do not deal with particulars. Well, why are you the cheese on the Universal Galaxy and also having been cheese here on the Earth galaxy with the Milky Way? Why do you go from one of these experiences to another? And she says, because I want to. Because I think it's fun. Because I think it's a great idea. Well, now, what were you thinking about while you're sitting here in this lecture, and all of a sudden I asked you, where are you? Because I could tell you were somewhere else, you know. You were off on some mind trip. And you say, well, that's exactly where I was, on a mind trip. I was in the universal mind, in the universal awareness, in the universal allness, and I was in this mind trip. And on this mind trip, what I was doing was just having fun, being myself. Well, what does that mean? Well, it means everything, and it means nothing. What do you think it means to be on the universal mind trip and be everywhere and be nowhere and to just be yourself and have fun? What do you think it means? Well, I would think I wouldn't have the slightest idea what to say, you know, because it's so, you know, erudite, it's so unreal, it's so limited. If I were to think on just on the Earth experience alone, and here I am aware of the total Earth operation, as I am, and what would I tell other people the total operation of the Earth galaxy, the Earth of the Earth experience is? What would I say? Well, I would just say that it is what it is. You know. Well, that's certainly begging the question. No, it's not, because when you're thinking on universal concepts, you're not. Now, Sibylla, where is your office on the Earth galaxy and the Earth concept? Well, my office is in Nigeria. It's in Owerri. Well, that doesn't sound very imposing. But tell me about your office. What do you have in your office? Well, I have my desk and my computer, and I have the whole world at my fingertips, you know, through the internet, through my speaking with them in my universal net, you know, in the all-nets net. And I say, wow, that's really something. You must have a very impressive office there in Nigeria to be the president of the Earth complex, you know. And she says, no, that's one thing I don't need. Nobody knows who I am, what I am, where I am, or what I'm doing, because all they know is what I tell them over the internet, what I tell them through my talking to them on my computer. That's all they know. They don't know anything else. And people on the universal galaxy have no idea who is the president. I told them I'm the president. That's how I became the president. And I operate the whole show from my computer. And where do you have your universal galaxy presidential suite where you work from? Owerri in Nigeria. Owerri in Nigeria. Well, it's part of the universal allness. I mean, it's as much part of the galaxy as any other part of the galaxy. Well, why didn't you take New York City or London, England or something like that? You know, why did you take such a small place? Well, I didn't take any place. That's where I am. And what I took was my operation through this, through the network, to reach out into everything. If you asked, and if you tried to consider, where is the focal point of all network computations, what is the headquarters of that? Where is it located? Is it, what syntaxis is it located on? What neuron, what proton, neuroproton, what neuron is it located on? What aspect of the universal brain complex is it located on? And it wouldn't matter, because I am the universal intelligence that works through the universal brain, that works through the universal mind, that works through the brain wherever it may be. Whether it's my universe, my particular brain, my personal brain, or whether it's the universal brain. I am there. Now, well, that doesn't sound like it's very impressive. Well, what do you think I'm trying to impress? Do you think Einstein was in a very impressive location when he thought of the theory of relativity? What was he doing? He was thinking of it in his university status, and he was thinking of it in his lecture hall. He was thinking of it in his office at the university. And he was also thinking of it where? In bed. In bed. He went to bed, and he was thinking of the theory of relativity. And in the middle of the night, he woke up, and it came to him. And he wrote this theory down, and then he went back to sleep. Didn't think a thing about it. Woke up in the morning, looked at it, and said, "Wonder what that means." You know. And then he thought about it. He said, "Of course, I know what it means. I've been searching for it, the theory of relativity. Now I found it. Now, I'm going to present that, and let the chips fall where they may. Is anybody going to believe me? Is anybody? Everybody believes him, but he didn't care. He didn't care if anybody believed him, but." Everybody believes in. There are some people who are still fighting the theory of relativity, but they will not achieve anything because they're fighting the theory of relativity instead of searching for what the theory of relativity is. I'm going to prove you wrong. Well, how can you prove me wrong when you don't even know what I'm doing that's right? How can you prove me wrong when you don't have anything to stand on? When you don't have any concept to stand on, any idea of what's going on. Do you understand? You're not sure. But you see, this is what the brain is all about. This is what the mind is all about. The mind is the universal storehouse, universal allness. And out of the mind, you can take particularized items and work with them, or you can take universal items and work with them. Universal items and particularized items are all together in the universal mind. And there is no separation. It's like an ocean. The universal mind is like an ocean where everything exists mixed up together. There is no awareness of anything being separate. That's why it's so hard to describe it. Because it's all one. It's like you were to say, okay, now let's mix up a batter for cake. That's the easy part. And so we're going to take the flour and put it in a bowl. We're going to put some oil in there. And we're going to put what?
The sugar, the margarine.
See, the sugar and the butter.
Butter.
The sugar and the butter. Butter. And we're going to put in the taste,
vegetable. The texture.
Taste.
The
taste. The texture comes, but you're going to put in vanilla, and you're going to put in, say, a strawberry flavor to it, or something, depending on how.
Baking powder.
Baking powder.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Everything.
And chocolate. And chocolate.
Yeah.
A chocolate strawberry cake, you know. So you're going to make this real nice.
Mixture.
That's the texture. You're going to mix it. Now, when you mix it, what's going to happen?
It's going to bind.
So that's true. But what's going to happen? You won't know where your chocolate is. You won't know where your flour is. You won't know where your baking soda is. You won't know where your vanilla is. You won't know where anything is. It's all mixed, bound together.
Entangled.
Entangled, that's a good word, yeah. It's all entangled together so beautifully that nobody could tell it apart. Now, if you... And think about this, it's kind of silly. If you were the chocolate in the cake, could you speak out for chocolate cake? Could you travel the world and say, chocolate cakes are the best kind of cakes you could ever want. Chocolate should be used in many ways. Or would you be so bound up in the cake you could not get out and speak? But you see, now we come to another point. Chocolate comes in two flavors. It comes in the expression and it comes in the ideal. It comes in the icon or the something that it's symbolic of, or it comes in the actual chocolate itself. Now, are we talking about the icons? Are we talking about the examples? Are we talking about chocolate as chocolate Or are we talking about chocolate as a piece of chocolate that you could taste? You know, no. This is how it is on the universal and on the relative. On the relative, the chocolate is both something you can taste, like the cake that is finished, and it is something you can taste in itself as an individual concept. Now, in the universal, you can never taste it. You can never eat the cake that you make. You can never do any of these things because that's not part of the universal awareness. Universal awareness is awareness of all. It's not aware of any uniqueness in any area. You take a drop of ink and drop it in the ocean, and soon it's disappeared because the vastness of the ocean dissolves the color of the ink and you can't see anything anymore. But that ink is still its unique and total self because it's a concept, and the ocean is a concept. Now, how are you going to work with your life? It's all... Now, okay, now, answer this next question for me. What is the concept?
Idea.
What is the concept?
Idea.
TFT.
Thoughts.
Thought. The concept is thought. It is a thought. Can you imagine that? The concept is a thought. So, if the concept is a thought, is it a tasteable, touchable thought? Or is it a universal thought where it has no ability to be tasted or touched? It's just an is. Would you like to eat some cardboard or would you like to eat some cake? Of course you say, I'd like to eat some cake. But what does that mean? See, my mind is my most prized possession. Now, why is your mind your most prized possession? Because your mind is the allness. Your brain, no big deal. You mess up this brain, you get yourself another brain. You get yourself another brain. You get yourself another brain. You die, you live, you're born, you mess it up, you know. You become a prize fighter, pow, pow, pow. Knock your brain right out of your head. You do all these things. But my mind is my most prized possession because in it, everything is. But it does not have the ability to differentiate. It's like our mind is like a stem cell. It is undifferentiated. It has all the potential of being an eye, ear, nose, or throat, you know. It has all the potential of everything, but it is not everything. That is, it is everything, but it is not anything, is the word. It is not one thing. It is everything. So if the mind is everything, how can we use it? How can we benefit from the mind? How can we have the mind be something that's fun for us to activate ourselves with? How can we do that? Well, we can't. We can't. Now, let's stay with that and go into the next aspect of it. What is the mind's activity? What is the mind's activity? The mind's activity is that if the mind does not have a brain somewhere to activate it, it will never be activated. It will be the universal allness that exists in the universe without having an affectation or an experience.
Outlet.
An outlet, right. It does not have an outlet. It's not revealed. So, when you think about that, it's quite, not the word exciting doesn't fit there, but it's quite irritating or something. What can you do? How can you ever have something? Then, you see, you're on my right side, so you're the one that gets touched all the time. You know, you're over here, I can't reach you. But how do you ever express anything as a human being or as a relative being or as not the universal, but as a relative mind, how do you express it? When everything you express, without exception, is an illusion. It's an appearance. It's not real. It's real insofar as you think it's real, and insofar as you pretend that it's real and you act as though it's real, but it is not real. It's not real because of what? Because it's not the symbol. It's not the icon of the object, but it is an expression of the object. And the expressions of the objects, by necessity, will always be less than pure, less than perfect, less than absolute. Because nothing absolute can ever be revealed. Because, number one, we don't have the capacity in our physical body to perceive, an absolute concept. Because you cannot look at the stadium light. You know what a stadium light is? A bright, bright light up the stadium. The stadium has all these big lights shining down on the stadium at night. You cannot look at that stadium light and tell me how many bulbs are in there. You can't. Because it is all light. You look at the stadium light and you try to count and you say, oh my gosh, there's yeah. And you look, it blinds you. And you see nothing. You see nothing, which is what always happens in the absolute. We see nothing. We only see perceptible ideas, perceptible aspects of concepts. We only think our thoughts. Our thought can see it. But our perceptible universe cannot see it. It's a very, very complex and beautiful concept. If we were to really understand what I'm saying here, and me too, if we were really to understand what I'm saying here, we would be boggled. You know, our minds would just be, you know, my God, that is just beyond comprehension. It's beyond comprehension. It is beyond comprehension. Now, taking that into account, how can we ever say that I am whole and perfect? When you don't even know what wholeness is. You don't even know what perfection is, you know? And you think it's perfect relative to something. But there's nothing to be relative to if it's perfect. If it's the ideal of perfection, the ideal of an expression, it cannot be relative to anything. When a fish cries in the ocean, where does the tear go? You know? It's amazing. These things are all lost in the infinity of allness. And it is so beautiful. It is so beautiful. You have so much fun to have in life without getting bound up in the moral turpitudes of life and getting bound up in what is right and what is wrong and what is good and what is bad. But you do have something very special inside of you. And yes, that's what comes next. You do have something very special inside of you. And what you have, you know, peek, huh? what you have is something that cannot be labeled, it cannot be understood, it can only be utilized. And I will tell you what it is. Before we catch our next point here. What it is you have the ability to perceive through perception, through introspection, through an inner awareness. And in that inner awareness, you cannot put a name on it. You cannot put a label on it. You cannot put a description on it. It's just describeless, you know. It has no ability to be even perceived in a human or in an outward form. It's an inward form. It's a sensation. It's not emotion. but it's sensation. It's a sensitivity with your inner self to it. This is how truly we know all truth. This is how truly we know all that exists, because we are perceiving it from our inner awareness. Now, can you perceive through your inner awareness? Are you aware of what you're perceiving through your inner awareness? Are you aware of how you understand life, how you understand people, how you understand these experiences here? When everything here is a lie, everything's a lie. Everything that you're looking at is not really what you're seeing. It's just how you perceive it to be, and you're perceiving it to be with a half-baked attitude of your reality. The reason I say half-baked attitude to reality, because you have not been introspecting and getting to know your inner self, tuning in with your inner self. Because when you tune in with your inner self, then all is known to you. But you won't do that. You won't spend the moment or two every day saying, I know that I know that I know, and believing it and going on from there. You won't do that. But you could. If you do, then your inner introspection becomes a balancing experience for you, and everything you see out here, which is a faulty illusion, you know. See, there's a computer setting open, there's a computer setting closed. Now, which one is right? Now, is there a right and a wrong between that sort of thing? Why is it? Now, there's her purse sitting on top of two pillows on a chair. And down below on the chair is the case in which the computers go, and on top of it is Bewitched, you know. Bewitched! My God, what's that there for? And behind it is a paper shopping sack, you know. And underneath it is a piece of material with something written on it, you know. Now, and it's a chair that it's all sitting in, and below the chair are a bunch of other things, you see. Now, if that isn't as much confusion as the world can handle in a second, I don't know what is, you know. But we don't look at that. You see, when you are intuitively intuned and perceptive to your divine self, you look at the purse and you say, that is a purse. And you don't say what it's sitting on. You don't say what is surrounding it. And you're not interested in that. Or you look behind the purse at the pillow and you say, what a lovely pillow. I imagine that would just be perfect for me to sit there and sit back in my chair and put it behind my head and be very comfortable. And here the chair is full of all that other sort of interesting things. But you don't allow yourself to be inundated by that flow of objectivity, subjectively looking at those things. You're objectively looking at a thing, but objectively, if you look at all the things, you say, what a bunch of confusion, you know. And it is, and it is not. Each thing was laid there purposefully. Each thing was put there as when it was put there for a reason. And the other things added to it made it look confusion. Now, this is why the new university of confusion is a reality. Because the university of confusion, and this is a university, it's a bona fide university in the United States, it is a university that has studied confusion, and chaos, rather, is what the word is for it. It has studied chaos, the University of Chaos, and it has found that true chaos is absolute order. It's order on a scale that we do not perceive, because like the allness scale. It's on a scale that we don't perceive, because if you could listen to a drip of water and you think it's irritating, and then you take the scientist's mind and you listen to the drip of water, and you begin counting its pulse. You begin taking its metronome time beat. You begin feeling the energy that's coming, and the energy is another area that's very exciting. And you feel that energy that's coming from the dripping water, and then you start putting a rhythm with it. You have a 3-4 rhythm, a 4-4 rhythm. You have an 8-12 rhythm. You have a rhythm that cannot be perceived unless it's perceived. But and then, just at the point when you figure out the rhythm, it changes its rhythm. It adds another focal point to its rhythm, another aspect to it, putting it into another beat, which was always there, but you didn't hear it because you hadn't tuned into it enough. And then each time you get tuned into it, it becomes more complex. And so the chaos is so utterly fantastic. The confusion is so utterly amazing that the confusion becomes the most significant order. And this is what the scientists who are working on this rather unique university are coming up with. They're trying to show us, as I am saying to you, that though the uniqueness is perceivable and understandable, the uniqueness is not the picture. The uniqueness is not the truth. It's purely illusion. It's purely a appearance of the moment, of the now. And the absolute quality has a rhythm and a beat and a motion to it and a dynamics of energy that is unbelievable. And then we get into the energy. You see, our thought is directing energy. That's what is really happening. That's what our thoughts are really working on. And they're directing the energy of the universe to have things perceptible to us and things unperceptible to us. Not that they're making things unperceptible to us, but they're making us more harmonious with all the universe so that we can perceive a greater amount. And one day we perceive it all and we know nothing. And as we're learning to perceive it, we think we know a lot. But each step that we take into it takes us deeper into the university of chaos, deeper into the chaotic aspect of it, and that chair has a harmony to it. Everything was put there with a purpose. Everything was put there for a loving purpose. Everything was put there not perhaps for a dramatically beautiful purpose, you know, a good-looking chair with all that stuff sitting on it, but just as a purpose. Now, why does her purse sit on top of everything? Well, because it was the last thing put there. But it wasn't the last thing put there. I picked up the Bewitched and looked at it, and then I put it back down there, so it became the last thing put there. And so now, how can her purse be the last thing put there if I put Bewitched down later? It was there, but I put it back and took it away and put it back. Now, how can I have the right to do that? To mess up the balance of that chaotic experience. How can I do that? And you see, this is the beauty of our mind, and the beauty of thought, and the beauty of thinking, and the beauty of who and what you are. Can you really be who and what you are? Can you really be the type of person that you think you are? Are you a lovable person? Are you a loving person? Are you the person who would not take candy from a baby, you know? And the truth is, she would take candy from a baby. She doesn't think the candy is good for a baby. So she'd take it away and give him something else. But she doesn't think it's good for a baby. She thinks, you know, and you're welcome to have that opinion. But why do you think it's not good? Only because you're not in the thinking of the all, absolutely allness. In the allness, there's nothing wrong with candy at any time. At any time. It's not going to hurt or help. It's not going to make or break. There's nothing wrong with poison. Poison cannot do whatever poison is supposed to do if you are the absolute. Because you are one as the poison. You are one as the candy. You are one as everything. And nothing of any nature can hurt you. It can only mess up the relative. It can only mess up the appearance or the illusion. And this is how it is with a tiger chasing you, you know. It can only mess up the appearance of the illusion. And when you stop, get down on your knee, not knees, but on your knee, and say, "Well, tiger, how you doing?" And sincerely do it. Don't have an inch of fear or anything in you that makes that tiger say he's insecure. And then say, "Come on over here, I want to give you a hug." And the tiger might look at you and say, "You're crazy," and run, you know. But he's not going to hurt you because you are untouchable. You are untouchable. You are drinking poison, and it's not hurting you and touching you in the slightest because you're not drinking poison as poison. When you are absolute in consciousness, you are untouched by all these. Now, I'll say this, and you know this already. Should you walk on fire, you will burn your feet. Is that true? Yes.
Yes.
If you walk on cool, wet, and moss, will you burn your feet?
No.
No. No. If you walk on fire, you'll burn your feet. Do these fire walkers walk on fire? No.
No.
What do they walk on?
Cool, wet, moss.
They walk on anything else under the sun, but not fire. They're walking on cool, wet, moss. They're walking on something that would not make their feet uncomfortable. Now, they're making a travesty out of that information. The appearance is that that fire is there. The appearance is that those coals are red hot and really hot. And he's barefoot. She's barefoot. And they're going to walk on those coals. Now, you and I know, ho, 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 they're going to be burned. But they know that they are walking on something other than fire, cool with moss. And is that going to burn them?
No.
Now, that's what they know. Now, all right, can you do that? Can that be done? Can you people walk on about a pure three fire? Mm-hmm. Yes. Now, if they can they levitate?
Yeah.
Can they levitate?
Yes.
Can they teleport?
Yes.
Can they levitate themselves and levitate something? Tell us, you know, have the glasses come to them or raise up in the air, you know? Can they tell their tummy that it's full and they're satisfied?
Yes.
Hypnotically, you can do that to yourself and your tummy is full. Can you tell yourself that you are the king of the world or queen of the world, or you're master of everything? Yeah.
Yes.
And then are you the master of everything? So long as you really know you're walking on cool, wet moss, you are the master of everything. And as the master of everything, you can do anything. You can be invisible, you can be visible, you can do anything you want. That's true. And this is and has been done and is being done all the time. Now, people are not talking about it because they realize if they say something to people, there will be doubters in there. And if they let the doubt of the doubter enter their consciousness, they're going to walk on that hot fire. One woman was walking on fire in Switzerland, and she was doing a good job. And she had her friends there, and the newspaper was there. And the newspaper man was taking pictures, and she was a pretty lady. And he said, "Will you walk across the fire again for me?" And she says, "Sure, I'd be glad to walk across the fire for you anytime." Boom! She burned her feet. She just saying it, because she reverted to the appearance rather than the appearance that she had learned to have in her consciousness. The appearance she learned to have in her consciousness. Now, are you ready to have the appearance in your consciousness of whatever you are ready to have? What do you want in your consciousness? Do you want the appearance of happiness, of health, of success, of right action, of peace, of truth? What do you want in your consciousness? Are you ready to do what is necessary to do? It's necessary to say that's cool, wet moss. Lie to yourself. But you're not lying to yourself. You are renaming the appearance for what you want it to be. My husband and I have a perfect relationship. Our lives are just wonderful. It's hell. Oh, it is hell. Your relationship is as down and beat and terrible as anything could be. But you say, "I'm tired of that. I got a rich husband, I've trained him well, and we've gotten along all these years. Why should I throw it away now at the last minute? I like my husband, I really like him. All it is, we got to balance ourselves out a little bit." So, I have the ideal husband, you say. You see. Now, when you start saying this, you're going to say, "Who am I trying to fool? Who am I trying to kid?" But you're not trying to kid anybody. You are putting a new cause in motion. You are putting him on the ground as cool, wet moss instead of as the flaming coals. That's all you're doing. And you're not doing anything bad or good or indifferent. You're merely making a decision. I am going to walk on cool, wet moss and not on the flames. You're not going to say not on the flames. Well, you are going to say that. You're not going to walk on the flames, but you're not going to name them. I'm going to walk on the cool, wet moss. No, are you going to walk on the cool, wet moss?
Yes.
Okay. And are you going to have a problem?
No.
No. No. And are you going to be stupid? And I'm trying to be gentle here. Are you going to be stupid and be ignorant and type of person like that? And a person who doesn't have their marbles in place all the way? And are you going to do that too? Sure. Sure. Why? It is the principle. It is the principle. Name it and claim it. Name it and experience it. Call it cool wet moss, and it's cool wet moss. So you take the person who doesn't have all his marbles in his head properly, and the poor guy, sometimes they don't. And you say, that's cool wet moss. And he says, oh, okay, that's cool wet moss. But you see, what he could be doing, he could be saying, that's cool wet moss, but look at the flames. Look at the smoke and look at the heat coming up out of there. That's cool wet moss, but look at that. You see, because he is so intellectual, he's so incapable of logical thinking, that he looks at that and he says, that's what I see. That's the appearance that's there. You want to call those colds cool wet moss? Okay, those colds are cool wet moss. Now I'm walking on the coals of cool wet moss. And he'll burn himself. Or he can be so blasé about it, you say to him, okay, everybody's walking on the cool wet moss. Now, don't look down. See? Just look straight ahead. Look at something off in the distance and walk over here. And come on now, walk right across that cool wet moss. That's a nice timber across the river there. But just walk across that cool wet moss. And he'll do it. But you have to take charge of his mind, his brain. You have to take charge. Can you take charge of his brain? Sure. And you take charge of yours first. You walk across that cool wet moss yourself, and then you tell him, come on, it's cool wet moss. Now look straight across there. See that kitten up in the tree there? What's that kitten doing in the tree? You run over there and help that kitten on the tree. So he runs across the cool wet moss to help the kitten on the tree. Did he get burned? No. You see, his attention was diverted from that material. Now, you can do these things in other ways. And like I said about the husband, he's acting like a jerk. You know, you've been married 40 years, and now he's all of a sudden acting like a jerk. And he feels life has passed him by, and he hasn't had the thrills that he wanted to have. So now you change your attitude. You like your husband. I mean, you like any man, whether he's your husband or whether it's anything. If you're going to have him as a relationship in your world, you're going to like him. And so you say to him, to yourself, you say, George, you are fabulous. You're saying this to yourself. George, you are fabulous. And you're acting like this. George, you are fabulous. George, you live according to the divine within you. George, you are the ideal husband. George, you are the ideal man. George, you are beloved. George, I love you with all my heart. And George, you are something very special. George, you are marvelous. George, you are a husband to be wished for by every woman on the face of the earth. But you chose me because I wanted the best when I chose you, and you wanted the best when you chose me. You know? And so you say these things. You've got to get yourself to believe it. You got to walk across that fire yourself before you can encourage someone else to do it. So you believe it. And you believe your husband is a super guy in every possible way. Super wonderful, fantastic. And when you do that, then you have put a cause in motion that it happens. And then you just keep it up in your mind. You keep it up and you act toward him like he's the best. You act toward him like you have a relationship that'll never end. You act toward him like life begins and ends with the magic of your presence together. You act like that. What's going to happen? What's going to happen? You will have the most wonderful relationship in the world. Your marriage will be more solid than the Bank of England. You'll just be fantastic. I shouldn't have said that, should I? But the Bank of England is solid too. But you would find the most beautiful relationship you could ever imagine. And why would you find that beautiful relationship? Because of one thing. Because you have decided that it's going to be that way for you. And you have made it happen. Exciting, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, what you're catching on that, if you want to catch it, is something pretty exciting. My mind is my most prized possession. And I am well aware that I am absolutely in charge of how much of my mind I use in my everyday affairs by my choice. I love you.